my honor and my fortune and my great pleasure to be with all of you this evening. Thank you for being here and for giving us a chance to serve. Today is which day of the Bhagavad Gita? Fourth day. So you have been hearing from very erudite, scholarly, saintly people, and today you have to listen to me. I'm actually very unprepared for this, but sometimes that's a blessing. Today I was asked to speak on the sixth canto. The sixth canto of Srimad Bhagavatam begins, Parikshit Maharaj, is asking Sukadev Goswami, who didn't need a sound system, he's asking because in the fifth canto, Sukadev Goswami describes the various conditions that impious karma could culminate in through hellish sufferings. And he's describing the lower hellish planets. And when you listen to it, it's very fearful. In fact, I remember one time, one devotee, I knew him, and due to a weakness of heart, he left the path of bhakti and was hiding from Vaishnavas. But one day, he wanted to go to the farthest possible place where he wouldn't see any devotees. So he took an airplane to Alaska. And when he got to the airport in Alaska, there was a devotee there who gave him a book. To sell him a book. So he wanted to just get rid of this devotee and just gave him some money and took the book. It was the fifth canto of Srimad Bhagavatam. He never saw it before because it just came out at that time, just published. And he opened it up and there was a description of hellish planets and what kind of activities bring you to what planet and what happens there. And he had just done that thing earlier the day. So he came back to the temple that very day. So Parikshit Maharaj just heard from Sukadev Goswami a description of hellish planets. And he felt very compassionate for the whole world. He had never committed any impious acts. He made one mistake due to neglect, and he was cursed to die, as we have heard. But this was the nature of Parikshit, such a leader. He made a slight mistake, and very immaturely and wrongly cursed to die in 7 days. But he accepted it as a blessing. Because even though he had a beautiful family and a wonderful kingdom, and he was still quite young and strong, he was seeing that everything was given to him as a caretaker of God's children and of Krishna's property. He was in a spirit of service. When a person thinks that Janasyamohoyo mahamameti, that I am this body and those things in relation to this body are mine. We become subjected to endless desires, frustrations, and especially fear. One of the primary motivating forces of the world today is fear. Fear of losing your popularity. Fear of losing your wealth, your power, your loved ones. Fear of death. But when one realizes that I am the eternal Atma, a part of God, a beautiful, loving part of God is the soul. Najayate mriyate vakadachit. The soul is not subject to birth or death. And this body is a residence that I have to utilize for the highest purpose of the nature of the soul, which is to love God and serve Krishna. And therefore, nothing is mine. Everything is the property of Bhagavan. I'm the caretaker. And whether we're a Baba or a Swami with nothing, or whether we're great kings or emperors of the entire world, the same principle is there. Whatever situation I'm in, I'm here to serve. That understanding rises the consciousness above frustration and above fear. And what is the nature of one who rises above frustration, selfishness, egoism, and fear? Their love for Krishna naturally awakens. And to the degree we have love for Krishna, our life is motivated by compassion for others. And that becomes our joy. How we could serve and make a difference in other people's lives. That joy is beyond the circumstances and conditions that are always changing in this world. Because that joy is coming from the immortal soul that is within us. Here is Parikshit. Sixth canto means he only had maybe about 4 days to live. He was certain to die in 4 days. And he had already taken a vow he wasn't going to eat anything or drink anything or even sleep. He was going to use his continuous time just to hear the nectarine glories of the Supreme. Lord Krishna. He hadn't eaten, he hadn't slept, he hadn't drunk anything. He was about to die, lose his family, his kingdom. And what was he thinking? He was thinking about everyone else on earth. He wasn't thinking, why is this happening to me? He's thinking that so many people in this world are suffering and they're engaging in so many impious activities, they're going to have to go to these hellish places, many of them. So in compassion for them, he spoke to his guru, Shukadev, who was speaking the Bhagavad Purana. He said, it grieves my heart to think that people may have to undergo these types of suffering. Please enlighten us. How can one escape from it? And Shukadev Goswami quoted from the Dharma Shastras that if you atone for your immoral activities, you neutralize the effects of them. And then you don't have to suffer the consequences. And he went into some detail explaining the nature of atonement. According to the severity of our sins, we have to accept very strong, difficult atonements. But then you're cleansed. Parikshit Maharaj, he said, I cannot accept this. Because if one still has this false ego and this selfish desire in their heart, then even if they atone for their sins, they're going to do it again. And then they atone again and do it again, and they atone again and do it again, just like an elephant bathes in a river and gets completely clean and then comes out and with its trunk throws dirt all over itself. How to actually become free from the inner propensity to engage in these impious activities. Shukadev Goswami replied, he was very happy. Sometimes if teachers are challenged that I reject what you just said, they don't like that. But Shukadev Goswami was really happy because Parikshit Maharaj was, he wanted to go to the essence. Shukadev Goswami told him that through bhakti yoga, the yoga of devotion, wherein one surrenders to the Supreme Personality of Godhead, the very root cause of the false ego and desires, is vanquished. And one's pure self emerges. Just like weeds. If you cut a weed, it grows back. You perform some atonement for impiety. It's like cutting the weed, but then it's going to grow back. Definitely, because the roots are still there. But if you burn the root, it can never grow back. So bhakti burns the root cause of all suffering from our hearts. And what is that root cause? Forgetfulness or ignorance of who we really are and what our real happiness is. We're eternal souls. This body only lasts for a few years. The human life is so rare and so precious because within this life, we have the opportunity to realize our true identity. Prema. Prema Dan. And understand the treasure of the love that we're seeking. Love for Krishna. And when that love is connected to, then we utilize this wonderful body we have in whatever condition it's in. And the wonderful resources we have in this world as seva, in a spirit of love, in a spirit of compassion. And Shukadev Goswami told, there are 9 processes of devotional service, but the most powerful is the chanting of God's holy names, Hari Kirtan. The power of Kirtan, when in a proper mood of service, in the association of people who are guiding us toward the real goal and keeping us focused on the real goal of life, then the name of God awakens our true self. And the propensity for impious activities or pious activities is transcended. Bhakti is beyond piety and impiety. It's above karma. And he said, I have heard from my great mentors an ancient history that illustrates this truth. He said, there was a village called Kanyakubja. In that village, there was a very, very pious Brahmin family . Within that family was a son whose name was Ajamil. And he learned from his father and mother and grandfather and grandmother and his forefathers a very, very pure life, a very moral, pious life of seva. He was chanting mantras. He was performing pujas. One day, he went out to collect some ingredients for puja. And he saw people with two people who had no character, who had no culture. They were publicly engaging in enjoying each other, a man and a woman. And he became so distracted, so disturbed by that. He went home and he tried to forget what he saw, but he couldn't forget. And eventually he went to that lady who was a prostitute and spent the rest of his life with her and engaged in the most abominable activities to satisfy her. His mother and father were old. They were totally dependent on him. He rejected them, completely neglected them, and they suffered miserably. He had a beautiful wife who was chaste and faithful and loving. He rejected her and left her alone, brokenhearted. In order to satisfy this other lady and himself, he became a cheater. He became a robber. He engaged in every type of abominable activity imaginable. And he had many children. And his youngest son was named Narayan. Now, why did he name his son Narayan? It describes this. Because he actually engaged in the service of the Lord before he was distracted. Neha bikramanasosti pratyavayo nevidyate. The Bhagavad Gita tells any progress we make in spiritual life can never be lost. It could be covered. It could be really covered, but it's never lost. So the Lord within his heart, the Paramatma, knows past, present, and future. And he knew that this youngest son he would be really attached to. So it was Narayan in the heart of this Ajamil who inspired him to name his son Narayan. He didn't know that. He just named him Narayan. And he loved Narayan a lot in his own way of loving. He would see Narayan playing and he would just want to play with Narayan. And he would hear Narayan trying to learn to talk and he was so, he's learning to talk and he's saying these words and his sweet words and his movements. And when he would eat and share his food with Narayan and then he would eat Narayan's food and they were just really close. Even though he was really doing so many terrible things to so many people, but now he was extremely old. And he didn't know in his old age he was about to die. And he fell down. He was on the verge of death. And he was in such a state. All he could think of was his son. That was his primary attachment to the whole world, was this son. And he was crying out, Narayan, Narayan, helplessly, because he realized he was about to die. And suddenly, these three very gruesome personalities with deformed forms appeared before him with ropes. They were the Yamadutas. They came to pull his soul out of his body and bring him to Yamaraj to face the consequences of all the pain he caused his wife, his parents, and so many, and practically everybody he came in contact with for all those years. When he saw them, he was horrified. They were so strong, and they looked so mean. And he was helpless. And they put the ropes around his soul, and he could see his own self being ripped out of his body, ripped away from his family, ripped away from everything with these people. And again, he cried out, Narayan, for his son. At that moment, three very beautiful personalities appeared. They were the message carriers of Lord Vishnu, the Vishnu Dutas. And the Yamadutas saw the Vishnu Dutas, and they heard with very resounding voice that was like the rumbling of clouds during the monsoon rainy season. The Vishnu Dutas called out, you have no right to take him away. The Yamadutas were shocked. Who is this telling us we have no rights? We are Yamaraj's representatives. The Yamadutas asked, who are you to challenge us? And the Vishnudutas asked the Yamadutas to explain to them the nature of religion and irreligion. There was an incredible philosophical discussion between these six people. And Ajamil, with these ropes around him, on his deathbed, is watching this discussion and listening to everything very attentively, because a lot was at stake for him. And the Yamadutas explained that ultimately Narayan is the Supreme Lord, the source of everything that exists. And he is living in his abode, but he's also the master of this creation. And within this creation, he has laws of nature and laws of karma. And the person who is the supervisor of all the laws of karma is Yamaraj. And this person, Ajamil, has engaged in so many terrible, violent, immoral activities. We have been sent to bring him to face the reactions of his karma. And the Vishnuduta said, you do not understand religious principles. He chanted the name of Narayan in a helpless state of consciousness. The name of God is not different than God. Even if in such a state where one is really crying out with feeling the name of God, even if it is without knowing who it's for, even if it's calling for someone else, even if it's inattentive, if it's real purpose, the name of the Lord is all powerful. It is so powerful that by saying the name Narayan, he has been cleansed of all the impious sins and all the piety also, all of his karma. He has been cleansed in this life and all of his previous lives. Therefore, you have no right to take him. And the Vishnudutas cut the ropes. The Yamadutas were shocked. Ajamil saw this. And he didn't die. But his ignorance died. His illusion died. And he began to regret what he had done. My mother and my father, they were so loving, they were so kind, they were so religious. They gave everything for me only. And look what I did to them. I caused them to live the rest of their lives in total poverty and misery. I betrayed my own family. And my wife, who gave her heart to me unconditionally, I betrayed her. How much pain, how much suffering I committed. Why? Just to fulfill my own selfish, arrogant obsessions. But still, the Lord is so kind that he remembered the good things I did in the past, and he's given me this next chance. And he's given me, through his messengers, the Vishnu Dutas, the key to perfection, his holy names. Ajamil then went to Haridwar, on the banks of the Ganga, in the Himalayan foothills. And there, with a completely humble heart, Sharanagati, he surrendered his life, his body, his mind, his words, his very soul, with gratitude to Lord Narayan, constantly chanting his names. And there in Haridwar, taking his baths in the Ganga, cleansing his physical body and chanting the holy names to cleanse his mind and heart, he became completely pure. And when he attained that pure state, the same three Vishnu Dutas descended with a beautiful airplane. And Ajamil was really humble. He bowed down and they welcomed him. They gave him an eternal spiritual body and took that spiritual body and brought it back to the spiritual world, to Vaikuntha, the eternal abode of Lord Narayan. He had attained the ultimate perfection, the supreme liberation. Meanwhile, the Yamadutas, they were really confused. They went to Yamaraj and they were so disturbed because their faith was really being challenged. They said to Yamaraj, "You are our master. No one in all of history has ever defied the orders that you give. And we're the messengers of your orders." There can only be one supreme. And as far as we are concerned, within this universe, you are supreme when it comes to the judgment of sinful people. So how is it possible that these three people were able to cut your ropes? And they successfully prevented us, even though we tried our best, from taking him away to you. How is this possible? We are bewildered. We are confused. Unless you answer our question, we're not going to be able to live. Yamaraj folded his hands and offered beautiful prayers to Lord Narayan. And he gave a wonderful speech. In essence, what he said was that myself, Lord Brahma, Lord Shiva, Lord Indra, Agni, Varuna, Surya, Chandra, Vayu, all of the devas who are the great controllers of creation and the expansions of the Supreme. We are all eternally subordinate to the one Supreme God, Narayan. And he's none different than his name. Because Achamil chanted the name without offense, helplessly. Therefore, he was cleansed of his sins. And he told the Yamadutas that the great Mahajans, Mahajano Yena Katasabanda, and he cited the great 12 Mahajans, this is the knowledge that we have realized. That one who surrenders to Narayan is liberated. The Bhagavad Gita tells the same thing. Sarva dharman parityasya mame kam sharanam braja aham vam sarva papibhyo moksha ishami masuja. Abandon all varieties of religion, dharma, and just surrender to me. I shall deliver you from all sinful reactions. Do not fear. Even though Achamil didn't surrender at the time, he chanted the name helplessly. And because of that, he was given the opportunity to surrender. And it was in Haridwar where he actually surrendered his heart and attained the perfection of liberation. Yamaraj told the Yamadutas that never look in the direction of a person who even once bows his head before Lord Krishna. Never approach anyone, whoever they are, if they've ever once sincerely chanted the name of Lord Narayana. Because I, Yamaraj said, I take the dust of the feet of the devotees of Narayan on my head. Achamil was liberated. Yamaraj, who's one of the great Mahajans, by this knowledge, he liberated the Yamadutas. And Shukadev Goswami tells that this beautiful history shows us the power of bhakti, the power of the holy name of the Lord. And anyone who hears this story with sincerity will gain the same blessing that Achamil did, whoever we may be. A little later in the sixth canto of Srimad Bhagavatam, there's a very famous story. And I'm going to end with this story, but it's a long story. And it has many divisions. Shukadev Goswami is telling the story of Indra. Indra is a great devotee. I want to give a little, what do they call that? Disclaimer? Is that the legal word? Because I don't want to say anything bad about Indra, but I'm just, because he's a great person. But Bhagavan wants to teach a lot of lessons to the world, and sometimes he teaches those lessons through his great devotees. So Indra is the king of the Swargaloka, the heavenly planets. Except for Brahma, Vishnu, and Shiva, all the devas are working under the supervision of Indra. So he's very, very powerful. And he has so much wealth and so much beauty and so much strength and incredible pleasures to enjoy. So one day, it was a special day, he was sitting on his throne in the heavenly world. And next to him, occupying half the throne, was his wife, Sachi. The demigods, the Gandharvas, the Kinaras, sages and rishis, they were all chanting from Rig Veda and other Vedas the glories of Indra. These are very, very supernaturally great people. They're all in unison chanting the praise of Indra and offering pujas to Indra and offering gifts to Indra with so much feeling. And he's sitting on his throne accepting the worship. At that moment, his guru, Brihaspati, from the back of the assembly hall, entered. Indra saw him. But Indra was so completely immersed in enjoying the glorifications he was receiving and the gifts and the pujas. And because so many exalted personalities were worshiping him, he just continued to receive. He did not welcome or receive or say a single word to his guru when he walked in. Brihaspati understood exactly what the future would bring, and he felt so sad. Because of his false pride, due to his opulences of riches, power, strength, influence, popularity, he didn't understand the culture of offering respect to a spiritually enlightened person. Brihaspati, in a very sad mood, didn't say a word. He just left. But by his powers, in his leaving, he sent a really strong message to Indra. See, if he just stayed, Indra would have just gone on like he did. But because he left, Indra didn't see him. And he was, where are you? And then he understood, what have I done? Because Indra's a devotee. I am so plagued by arrogance. Due to my everything that God has given me, I'm thinking it belongs to me. I'm thinking I'm the king of heaven. I'm thinking these are my subjects. This is all my wealth, and all this glorification is meant for me. And I didn't even have the simple etiquette to respect a person. He spoke very loudly in front of everyone. Better to have nothing and to live with culture than to have all this without the culture of humility and respect. And Indra knew that he was going to lose everything. He became very depressed. He saw what was coming, and he lost everything. What happened is, the asuras, the enemies of the demigods, the suras, they did special pujas to satisfy their guru, Sukracharya. So they got a lot of strength, and they attacked, and Indra was helpless. And the devas, without Indra's support, they became helpless. In that state, Indra approached Brahma, along with his associates. And Brahma chastised Indra.
why did you become so proud?
Don't you know that all these things that you're so proud of are all very temporary? What is integrity? Integrity is when we focus our mind on what is really sacred, what is really important, what is eternal. And we adjust and harmonize all our temporary things and all our temporary duties with our true Dharma, our Sanatana Dharma. Sanatana Dharma is the soul, is an eternal part of God, an eternal lover of God. And to be able to honor and respect the presence of God in others, that is Sanatana Dharma. And our other dharmas, our varnashram dharma, our occupational dharma, our family dharma, they should all be harmonized with our real purpose. Queen Kunti, she offered a beautiful prayer to Krishna in Hastinapur. Janmaishwarya Shruti Shribya Edamana Madhapu. That the very opulences or excellences that everyone in this world is starving, obsessed with getting, are the greatest disqualifications for spiritual life. Wealth, beauty, a high education, a high birth and fame. She said, why are these disqualifications? Because they have a tendency to make us proud, arrogant. And in that arrogance, we offend others. In that arrogance, we're envious of somebody who has more, and we think ourselves superior to somebody who has less. And we can't call out God's name with feeling. We can't perform any real spiritual activity with our heart, when we are plagued by that arrogance. But one who is a Kinchana Gocharam can attain the perfection easily. A Kinchana Gocharam means one who does not think they have anything. Now this is interesting, because Yudhisthira Maharaj was just coronated as king by Krishna just the day before or so that Kunti offered this prayer. So Yudhisthira Maharaj had the greatest wealth of anyone in the world. He had the greatest fame. He was beautiful. He was extremely knowledgeable. But he understood, this is Bhaktaram Jagat Tapasam Sarva Lokamaheshwar. This is all God's property under my care. And he used it in a spirit of seva, not as a spirit of exploitation. So you see, it's not wealth or high education or fame or beauty that's a disqualification. It's the tendency to become arrogant. That is the only real disqualification. If we have a humble spirit, Jivera Swarupoi Krishna Nitya Das, that we're all servants of Krishna, then the more we have, the more we can serve. The more we know, the more we can serve. George Harrison of the Beatles, he came before my guru. And he said, I want to shave my head and join the Brahmacharya. I want to become a monk because I have tens and millions of dollars and I have big estate and I'm so famous. This was when the Beatles were at their peak. And Prabhupada said, no need. He said, be a beetle. Use your money for good things, to help people. You're an incredible musician. You have unbelievable fame. These things are not material if you use them for a spiritual purpose. Bhakti is the art of transforming material energy into spiritual energy by seeing the potential in everything. And how does that transformation take place? Through our consciousness. By transforming our consciousness from I am the doer and I am the enjoyer to I am the servant. This is all this knowledge, all this wealth, all this fame and power has been entrusted to God by His grace. Maybe my hard work, but still, it takes grace because without grace we can't breathe, we can't see, we can't think. So we're all dependent on Krishna. So here was Indra. And Brahma explained this to him. You are a fool. Because Brahma's higher than Indra. And Indra ordinarily isn't ready to hear this, but now he's desperate, so he's ready to hear it. And Brahma told him that he should worship Vishnu, because only Vishnu could help him. And he told him, you should go to Vishwaroop. Vishwaroop, you know, Brihaspati's not going to talk to you because he's purifying you. But go to Vishwaroop. He's a great Brahmin. And ask him to perform some yajnas for you and to pray for you, and you will get the strength to regain all of your property and power. So Indra went to Vishwaroop. And Vishwaroop very kindly performed nice ceremonies of sacrifice and yajna and prayer. And he gave Indra what is called the Narayan Kavacha, which is the shield of Narayan. He received this from his father, Twashta, who received it from the great sage, Dadichi. And he said, if you always have this shield, this Kavacha of Narayan protecting you, nothing can harm you. And he taught him the Narayan Kavacha. It's a whole chapter of Srimad Bhagavatam. It's a series of beautiful mantras and verses invoking various aspects of Narayan or Krishna to protect us. In every way, in every possible situation, we're protected by chanting these mantras. So by the grace of Vishwaroop, Indra regained everything he lost. But then he heard about something. You see, Vishwaroop, his father was from the line of the demigods, the devas. So he was very inclined toward the devas. But the ancestry of his mother were from the asuras. So he had a soft place in his heart for everyone. Secretly, he was doing nice oblations, making offerings on behalf of the asuras, the demons. It wasn't any harm to the demigods. He was just the well-wisher of everyone. But Indra, due to his attachment, he was so fearful. When he heard about this, he became really angry. And he totally lost his intelligence in his anger. And he ran up to Vishwaroop and cut his heads off. Then he was thinking, my God, what did I just do? But it was done. So he did some atonement. But the father of Vishwaroop, Twashta, he was really disturbed. So he performed a yajna. And in this yajna, in this sacrifice, the last offering, he chanted a mantra. Indra Satru, which means the enemy of Indra. In other words, he wanted to create someone who would kill Indra. Because Indra just killed his son. And Vishwarupa was just sitting in meditation. He couldn't even defend himself. His eyes were closed when Indra came in. After Vishwarupa did everything for him. Special effects. Should I continue? This was in the Satya Yuga. In the Satya Yuga, people had such enormous qualifications that they were responsible for everything. In Satya Yuga, if you chanted one mantra out of tens and thousands of mantras necessary for a proper yajna, if you chant one wrong, everything spoiled. In Kali Yuga, nobody could do it. Therefore, in Kali Yuga, yajyai sankirtana prayaya janti hishu medesha. The recommended process is kirtan. Even if you make so many mistakes, if you're just sincere, you'll get this. You'll get the ultimate perfection. He chanted one syllable long instead of short. And you know what happened when he did that? The meaning of the mantra changed. Instead of the enemy of Indra, it became Indra who is the enemy. Does that make a difference to you? But in Satya Yuga, it makes a difference. Kali Yuga doesn't make any difference. Just chant Hare Krishna and everybody's happy. And that means instead of the person who will kill Indra, it means the person who will be killed by Indra. And when he chanted that mantra, from the fire, this personality came out. He was instantly started to grow and grow and grow and grow and grow and grow. And within just a day or two, he was covering the sky, and he was given the name Vritra, which means one who covers everything. He is known as Vritrasura, and he became the leader of all the asuras. They all rallied behind him, and he was so absolutely gigantic. The devas are big people, but they were like ants under his feet. That's how big he became. By the supernatural power of his Brahminical father. And Shukadev Goswami explained how this Vritra, how he was killed by Indra, and he attained the ultimate perfection because he was such a great devotee. And Shukadev Goswami was really curious about this. He said, I have a doubt. How did he attain perfection if he was an asura? And Shukadev Goswami told the story. Vritra, with all the asuras behind him, they attacked Indra and his army of devas. And he was so strong and so powerful. When he roared, everyone fainted. So how do you fight someone like that?
They were throwing their weapons at him. And you know what he did? All the demigods were throwing their best weapons at Vritrasura. He ate them all. He just caught them and just ate them. And this really, in the West, we would say it freaked out the demigods. We can't fight this person. So they ran back to Brahma. And Brahma told them, you better go to Vishnu because, you know, why did you do that to Vishwaroop? Brahma told him, go to Vishwaroop to be your guru, and now you killed your guru. What do you expect? So they offered prayers to Vishnu, and Vishnu appeared. And Vishnu enlightened them with transcendental knowledge and told them, you should go to Dadichi. He's very powerful, very enlightened man, and he's very compassionate. The only way you can conquer Vritrasura is if he gives you his body to make a weapon out of it. Take his body and his bones and give those bones to Vishwakarma, and he'll make a thunderbolt, and that weapon only can conquer Vritrasura. The devas went to Dadichi, who's sitting in his ashram performing his puja and his dhyan and his mantras. Completely peaceful, liberated soul. And they addressed him, oh, great personality, you are so compassionate. And great personalities like you, they are willing to sacrifice everything and anything for the well-being of others. So please give us your body. And Dadichi, he was detached from all of these things. But he wanted to play a joke on the demigods. He joked with them. He said to the demigods, pretending to be very serious, he said, how can you expect me to do that? Everyone is attached to their bodies. Without this body, how can we enjoy? This body is the vehicle. It's the vehicle by which we have our loved ones and our relatives and our possessions. And everyone fears death. Even great saints and sages fear death sometimes. How could you ask me to give up my body and expect me to do that? And the demigods, they said, but great personalities like you, they are willing to give up their lives for a higher purpose of the benefit of others. They're not attached to material things. It was like they were preaching to themselves, but they didn't know it. But that's what Dadichi wanted them to do, to enlighten themselves with their own knowledge. And then Dadichi, he offered the five elements of his body to the five elements of the universe, earth, water, fire, air, and ether. And then he offered his eternal soul in complete love and devotion to his beloved Lord, Krishna. He offered his soul to Krishna and he attained the highest perfection. And his body was left behind. Then Vishwakarma took the bones of that body and made a thunderbolt and gave it to Indra. Now they were really fearless. And Indra was so excited, he became effulgent. And they all attacked Vritrasura. And the army of Vritrasura, they had so many thousands and millions of weapons. And they started showering them on the demigods. But the demigods were so powerful with Indra that they completely eliminated all the weapons. None of them could be in the slightest bit harmed. and Indra was still shining like a sun. And the demigods, or the demons, the asuras, when they saw that they had no power against them, they became so depressed and afraid, they all ran away. And the demigods became so happy, they started chasing after them and trying to attack them from the back. And Vritrasura laughed. He said, "This is disgusting." He said, "All of you, my friends, you asuras, you're leaving me all alone in the battlefield because you're so afraid? Why are you afraid? Don't you know birth and death, they are inevitable? If one surrenders one's heart to Lord Vishnu, one attains perfection. And if for a warrior to die in the battlefield for a higher cause, they also get elevation to higher levels. So why should you be afraid? And you devas, what cowards are you? You're chasing these people from behind and shooting at them? You should never fight against somebody who's so afraid of you and you're running away. You're all cowards." So the asuras, they kept running. And now it was all the devas against Vritrasura. Do you like the story? It's a scary story. He roared, and they were very much disoriented. And they started shooting their weapons and throwing their weapons, and he was just pushing them away, eating them. And with his feet, he started squashing the devas. And at that point, it was really a helpless situation. Indra took his most formidable club, and with all of his strength, he hurled it at Vritrasura. Vritrasura effortlessly, with his left hand, he wanted to make a point to humiliate Indra. He just caught it, like. And then, with Indra's club, he hit Indra's elephant carrier, Airavata, on the nose, kind of on the forehead nose. And Airavata started bleeding, and he fell back 14 yards and then fell to the ground. And Indra's on top of him like this. And Indra was thinking, my best weapon, this club, didn't work. And he became extremely depressed. He gave up all hope that he could continue fighting. You see, Bhagavad Gita teaches us that we should not be attached to success or failure, honor or dishonor, happiness or distress. We should perform our duty for a higher cause. But Indra, because he failed in one effort, he lost all his courage to continue fighting. Even though Vishnu told him to fight, he gave up. And when he gave up, all the devas gave up. And Vritrasura saw this, and he began to preach to Indra. He said, "Indra, you have been given a thunderbolt from Dadichi. The power of Dadichi's devotion is in that thunderbolt, and it was given to you by the order and the grace of Lord Vishnu. Use it. Why are you so attached to pleasure and pain and honor and dishonor and happiness and distress and all of these things, success, failure? Just perform your duty and give up your fear." He said, "As for me, I give my heart and my life to the Supreme Personality of Godhead, Krishna, Narayan. He's my Lord, my everything. It is my desire that by the will of Vishnu, you kill me, and my soul could be liberated from this wretched Vritrasura body, and I could go back to my real home in the spiritual world. It is my duty to fight with you in this world, but you're going to win, because that's Vishnu's will. Now please, come and fight with me. Defeat me. If I win, then you have done your service to Vishnu. But if you win, my most cherished desire will be fulfilled, and I will return to my beloved Lord. And as he was preaching to Indra, Vritrasura went into a state of ecstatic trance and offered a beautiful prayer to his beloved Lord with his resounding voice for everyone to hear. And I really would like to read to you these prayers that the greatest of the demons, Vritrasura, is offering to Krishna. There is no other story like this in any literature of an asura offering a prayer like this. This is one of the most unique places in all Vedic literature. The most intimate, highest prayers of love are being offered on a battlefield by this gigantic demon who's squashing the demigods with his feet. O my Lord, O Supreme Personality of Godhead, will I again be able to be a servant of your eternal servants who find shelter only at your lotus feet? O Lord of my life, may I again become their servant, so that my mind may always think of your transcendental attributes, my words always glorify those attributes, and my body always engage in the loving service of your Lordship. O my Lord, source of all opportunities, I do not desire to enjoy in Dhruvaloka, the heavenly planets, or the planet where Lord Brahma resides, nor do I want to be the supreme ruler of all the earthly planets or the lower planetary systems. I do not desire to be master of the powers of mystic yoga, nor do I want liberation if I have to give up your lotus feet. O lotus-eyed Lord, as baby birds that have not yet developed their wings always look for their mother to return and feed them, as small calves tied with ropes await anxiously the time of milking when they will be allowed to drink the milk of their mothers, or as a morose wife whose husband is away from home always longs for him to return and satisfy her in all respects, I always yearn for the opportunity to render direct service unto you. O my Lord, my Master, I am wandering throughout this material world as a result of my fruitive activities. Therefore, I simply seek friendship in the association of your pious and enlightened devotees. My attachment to my body, wife, children, and home is continuing by the spell of your external energy, but I wish to be attached to them no longer. Let my mind, my consciousness, and everything I have be attached only to you.
when Vritrasura offered this prayer to the Lord with such feeling, such realization, such love, Indra was astonished. He said to Vritrasura, even though you're in the body of an asura, you're the greatest and most exalted of all devotees. You have no attachments except service to the Supreme Lord. You're immersed in the samadhi of always remembering the Lord. He recognized him as a great soul. Vritrasura, he told him, but it is our pastime. We must both fight. And have no fear, because you're going to win. It's the will of the Lord. So they began to fight. And eventually, Vritrasura, his legs were cut off by Indra with that thunderbolt. His arms were cut off. But he was so great, he couldn't be defeated. He swallowed Indra. Now Indra was in his stomach. But Indra had Narayan Kavacha on him. So he didn't die. He was just in there. And after Indra was totally defeated, Vritrasura entered into a state of ecstasy, meditating on Krishna. And he closed his eyes and just went into a trance in pure ecstatic love, meditating on Krishna. And Indra came out of his body at that time. And the only way to kill Vritrasura was to cut off his head. So Indra, with the thunderbolt, it took him 360 days to get through his head. A whole year. And then he severed the head. But Vritrasura didn't feel a single thing. Because he was, although he was in his body, he was beyond his body. His consciousness was absorbed in loving service to the Lord. He was remembering the beautiful lotus eyes of the Lord. The beautiful lotus-like form of the Lord. The form of the Lord whose complexion is like a monsoon cloud. Who is decorated with wonderful ornaments of his love for his devotees. He was meditating on the unlimited love and mercy that the Lord has for each and every single soul who's willing to open their hearts to receive it. The Bhagavad Gita, there's a verse, Vishayava Nivartante Niraharasyadeyana Rasavarjam Rasopyasya Param Tristvani Vartate. The attachments and aversions, the temptations and the fears of this world, they can only disturb us when we're disconnected from that higher reality of the pleasure of feeling Krishna's love and loving Krishna. Vritrasura was in the samadhi that the greatest yogis spend thousands of lifetimes trying to achieve. And therefore, he didn't even feel his head being cut off, because he wasn't identifying with his head anymore. He was identifying with his eternal body in the spiritual world. So when the head was severed, an incredible light, effulgent like the sun, which was his very soul, came out of his body and went right back to the spiritual world. And everyone could see this great saint attained the supreme liberation. And Shukadeva Goswami explains, anyone who sincerely hears this narration will be liberated from all their sins and liberated from all egoistic attachments in this world. When Vritrasura is saying, I'm no longer attached to my relatives, my family, or any of these things, he's not saying it in a callous way. He understood that it was time for him to leave. The greatest love within family life is love of detachment. And how is that? The great scriptures tell, when we see each of our family members as the children of Krishna, entrusted in our care, then our love for Krishna we are experiencing in our love for our family. Detachment doesn't mean being neglectful. Doesn't mean not performing our responsibilities. This is artificial detachment. It means that our relationships and our duties are seen in its spiritual perspective. And then there's the deepest love, there's this deepest attachment, where I see my husband or my wife or my children as Krishna's children in my care according to my relationship and how I make them happy, how I protect them, how I inspire them is how I'm serving God. Because we understand our relationship with their body, mind, and souls. And that was Vritrasura's realization as he left this world. Parikshit Maharaj, he asked Sukadev Goswami, can you explain how Vritrasura was the greatest devotee practically I ever heard of? Why he was in the body of such a gruesome, ugly demon? And Sukadev Goswami explained. Do I have time to tell? I'll make it a little fast. It's really a very, very revealing pastime about a king whose name was Chitraketu. He had the position of the emperor of the entire world. And he had many wives, and each one of them was beautiful and faithful and full of all good qualities. And he was such a pious king. He had enormous wealth, palaces, armies. He was unrivaled. He never had to stand for election. It was for life. And all the citizens in his kingdom loved him. Because a Raja Rishi is a king who's a Rishi. They see every living being as God's children entrusted in my care. Like a father to a family. That's the way a leader is supposed to see his country or her country. So all of his citizens loved him because he loved them and he protected them and provided for everyone physically, emotionally, and spiritually, especially by his own example. So everything was so nice. One day, a great Muni, Angira, came to visit Chitraketu. And he saw that Chitraketu looked very depressed. After Chitraketu Maharaj put Angira Muni on his own throne and washed his feet and offered him so many nice sevas, Angira Muni said, "Can you please tell me, why do you look so sad? Is it that you've performed some impious deed? Is it that you've disrespected an elder? Is it that you have lost some treasure that was very close to you?" And Chitraketu said, "No, all those things are perfect. But I do not have a son. I've tried for so many years, but I have no child. And it is my duty to my forefathers as the king to have a child who will be a prince who I can raise to be the next king." Just like Chitraketu Maharaj said, if a man is starving from food and water, if you give him a garland or fragrant oils or even jewels, it's not going to satisfy him because he needs food. He's hungry. In the same way, my heart is hungry, and nothing in the world can possibly satisfy me if I don't have a son. Angira Muni performed a sacrifice, a yajna. And from that yajna, after chanting mantras with his mystical potencies, there was some payasam that was offered. He said, "You take this and drink it and give it to your wife and you will have a son. And this son, name him Harshashoka, which means one who gives happiness and distress." King Chitraketu was thinking, every son gives happiness and distress, not a problem, but I'll have a son. But he didn't know what was about to come. So he drank that payasam and gave to his wife, and his wife became pregnant. First time in so many years, his wife was pregnant. He was so happy with such expectation. Soon, a beautiful son took birth. The whole kingdom celebrated the birth of the king's son. And Chitraketu, his whole life was revolving around that little son. If that son cried, nothing else mattered to him. If that son smiled or laughed or said a word, that was the ultimate joy to the king's life. His life revolved around that son, and naturally around the mother of that son. And the mother was so happy, not only to have a child that was so beautiful, but to see her husband so very, very proud and happy. But the nature of the world is success and prosperity brings distress to people who don't have it. The co-wives, because King Chitraketu had many queens, none of them could have a son for him. When they saw that this particular mother was getting all the king's attention, Chitraketu became so intoxicated emotionally by having the son that he forgot, and he didn't even really notice that he was sowing so much partiality to this one wife, he neglected the others.
He just thought everyone would be happy. He was insensitive in that way. But the other wives, they were burning with envy, feeling total neglect. And they gathered together and made a conspiracy. Secretly, they poisoned the baby. The mother, not hearing any noise from the baby's room, was thinking, "It's sleep. My little son is sleeping too long." So she told her servant, "Please, maidservant, bring my child to me." And the maidservant came and spoke sweet words to wake up the child, then touched the child and saw that there was no breath, there was no pulse. The maidservant shrieked in pain and fell to the ground. "Alas, alas." And when the mother heard this, she came running to the place and she saw her only son was dead. When the news came to King Chitraketu, he fainted. And when he finally came to the room and saw his little boy, to whatever extent he was happy when the child was born, to that extent and even more, he was in distress when the child was dead. This story is so much depicting the tendencies of human nature. My beloved Guru Maharaj, Srila Prabhupada, he told us that when we have satisfaction of spiritual connection in our own hearts, when we're enlightened, when we're really cultured in the right way, we become paradukaduki. This means another person's happiness is my happiness. And another person's sorrow is my sorrow. But the tendency is just the opposite. Another person's happiness becomes my sorrow. Because I want it. Why isn't it mine? Why isn't it about me? The basic principle of material existence is envy. That we can't enjoy another person's good fortune. As we said, if somebody has more than us, we become envious. If somebody else is praised more than us, we become disturbed. If somebody else succeeds better than me, it causes me distress. Why? Why not me? But in a cultured state of consciousness, we are elated to see the success of another. We enjoy hearing another being praised. How is this possible? The Bhagavad Gita tells, Prakrite kriyamanani guna karmani sarvasha ahankara vimudatma kartahamiti manyate. When we understand that we are not the doers, Krishna tells in the Gita that I'm the strength and the strong, I'm the intelligence of the intelligent, I'm the abilities that every person has. When God entrusts good fortune to another, we should be happy. We when we actually become a little spiritually awakened, do you know what happens? We find that when we can appreciate the good fortune of another person instead of being envious, that appreciation makes us even more dear to Krishna than the person who has it. And in every situation, we can all appreciate. If Prem Nidhi Prabhu gives this outstanding lecture, and I'm sitting thinking, God, I could never speak like that. If I think, why not me? Why can't I speak? Why is everyone saying nice things to him? What does that mean? That means there's such a serious poverty of real wealth in my heart. But if I can appreciate, that's wonderful. Look at how God has given him such abilities. And look at how so many people are appreciating him. That makes me so happy. Krishna's pleased by what he's doing. I'm also pleased with what he's doing. If I have that appreciation, I can make more spiritual progress than Prem Nidhi Prabhu when he gives his lecture. Does that make sense? Appreciation for other people's good fortune is the very basis of true dharma. And we thank God, thank him for giving such blessings to my dear brother. But when we become envious, what is bhakti? Bhakti is when we take ourself out of the center of our universe and put Krishna in the center of our universe. It's as simple as that. When we're in the center of the universe, then we have so many things to be envious about and so many things to be arrogant about and so many things to be afraid of. And there's all anxieties are just because we keep ourselves in the center. And all fears. But when we put Krishna in the center, then we see that everyone, aham bija pratapita, everyone's a child of Krishna. When we put Krishna in the center, everyone's in the center, including me, but not alone. We're all in the center. The second canto of Srimad Bhagavatam, it gives an analogy. If you water the root of a tree, that water goes to every part of the tree, all the leaves, all the branches, all the twigs, all the flowers. Similarly, when we put the root of all existence, aham sarvasya prabhava, Krishna, the source of everything, when we satisfy Krishna by putting the water of our affection, our love, our devotion, then it naturally our love and our appreciation extends toward everyone and everything. Then when we see the sunrise, Krishna's the light of the sun. We fall in love when we look at the sun. When we see the moon, Krishna's the light of the moon. We fall in love with the moon. Mamayavam so jivalokeji. Krishna says, I'm the taste of water. We taste Krishna in water. And all food and everything has water in it. And Krishna's the life within every living being. Every soul is a part of Krishna, a child of Krishna. So every living being, we naturally want to see prosper. We want to see them happy. When we find peace of mind within ourselves, then that beautiful verse, let all beings be happy.
That is our happiness, and just being an instrument to give all beings happy. So you see these queens in the Srimad Bhagavatam, they are here representing our tendencies, the frailty of human tendencies, to not elate with the happiness of others because we're in the center. Why not me? These queens were not bad people. Chitraketu was a saintly man. He was totally pious. He was a great devotee. He wasn't enlightened, but he was trying to be. But the queens that he's going to marry are going to be the best people, with the best background, from really good families and culture and character and qualities. But somehow or other, due to this circumstance, among each other, they all brought the worst out in each other. Similarly, in Ramayana, Kaikeyi, she loved Ram as much as Kausalya. She was so happy when she heard Ram was going to be coronated. But due to the influence of Manthara, that tendency of envy was drawn out of her, and it made her so wicked that she banished Ram just for her own son to be a king. The same principle happened here. When the child was dead, it's not that these queens became happy. They just became relieved of their envy. But what did they see? Their husband. He could not do anything. He was in such a totally pitiable condition. All he could do is cry and cry and cry, day after day, week after week. He could not perform any of his duties as a king. He was devastated. He built his life around that little boy. Ankira Muni knew what happened, and he brought Narada Muni to the king's palace. And the king explained his situation. And they explained such nice philosophy to him. This section of the Bhagavatam is extremely enlightening. And the king listened. They were explaining the nature of the soul and how sometimes due to karma and ultimately the will of the Lord, our destiny is not the way we plan it or we want it. But the soul of your son is eternal. He's not dead. He's just gone to another place. And we have to rise above the dualities of material existence and always remain encouraged and enthusiastic for our higher purpose in life. They explain the laws of karma, they explain the laws of destiny, they explain the eternal nature of the soul, and they explain the supreme, ultimate will of Bhagavan, or God, in our life. And he listened. And very respectfully, he was deeply moved by the words of Narada Muni. But then Narada Muni spoke to the dead child and said, "Please tell us why you left. I'm willing to give your life back. Not only your life, but when I bring you back to life, my son, my child, you can prosper with your father and your family,
and you could later sit on the throne of the kingdom. And to everyone's great surprise, the little boy sat up and opened his eyes and spoke. And he said that the eternal soul, due to its actions and its desires, is going through so many different types of lifetimes. Sometimes as a vegetable, sometimes a tree, or a fish, or an insect, or a bird, or an animal, so many varieties of animals, or a human being. And in each and every lifetime, we have mothers and fathers. The little child looked at Narada Muni and looked at his parents and said, "Which parents are you?" "I have so many parents. I've had millions of parents. I'm the eternal soul. There is no death. It's my destiny. By the grace of these sages and rishis, I know where I'm going, and I have no desire to be anywhere else but to flow at the river of my destiny by the will of God." And then the child, with the permission of his parents and the sages, lay down again. And Chichiketu and his wife and everyone else there became completely enlightened. Now Chichiketu was above all attachment and aversion. Through the grace of these sadhus, Narada and Angira, and by hearing from his own little son, he realized his eternal nature. He realized his eternal relationship with Krishna. And he became a Paramahamsa. And he was traveling around on pilgrimage, just chanting God's names in great happiness. And one day, he came to a very, very unusual setting. It was in the Himalayas. Lord Shiva was giving a class on renunciation of material attachments to yogis, babajis, and swamis, sadhus, all renounced people. They're all sitting, and Shiva is giving them an explanation about detachment. And as he was talking to these people, his wife, Parvati, was affectionately sitting on his lap and embracing him. And all the sages were just listening. Because, you know, sadhus don't have those kinds of relationships. But here their guru is doing it right in front of them. So they're in complete rapt attention, listening to Shiva, and Shiva's totally absorbed in preaching to them, and Parvati's looking at her husband and sitting on him. And Chichiketu, he was passing by, and he saw this, and he started to laugh, like that, kind of. Yeah, Lord Shiva, such a great personality. He's preaching detachment to these renunciates, these babajis, with Parvati affectionately sitting on his lap. And he laughed. Parvati considered this an insult to Lord Shiva. And she spoke very strongly, that you do not understand who my husband, Lord Shiva, who he is. He's above and beyond all the modes of material nature. He's above and beyond all material existence. And you are laughing at him because he wants me to sit on his lap. Because of this offense, because of this ignorance, I curse you to die and become a demon. That's what you need to purify yourself.
Now, if somebody here in South Bombay says, "I curse you to become a demon," what will you do? You just say, "Okay, you know, you just go eat prasad, you know." We don't care, because you know that people who curse us in this day, in this world, it doesn't really make any difference. But when Parvati, the goddess of nature, the Shakti of Shiva, when she says this, you know 100% it will come to be. So when Chitraketu heard the chastisement and the curse of Parvati, he smiled. And with folded palms, knowing that what she said would come true, he said, "Actually, I did not mean, I had no intention to insult Shiva. I was actually appreciating him in my own way." But still, if this is your wish, then I accept as a blessing. Now, with your permission, Parvati and Shiva, let me become a demon. When he spoke like that, completely unattached to anything because he realized his spiritual identity, Lord Shiva praised Chitraketu. He spoke to Parvati, and I'd like to conclude by reading some of the words that he spoke. Lord Shiva said, "My dear beautiful Parvati, have you seen the greatness of the Vaishnavas? Being servants of the Supreme Personality of Godhead Hari, they are great souls and are not interested in any kind of material happiness. Narayana parasarve nakutashtana bibhyate swarga pavarga narakeshu apituliyarta darshanaha. Devotees solely engaged in devotional service of the Supreme Personality of Godhead, Narayan, never fear any condition of life. For them, the heavenly planets, liberation, and the hellish planets are all the same. For such devotees are interested only in the service of the Lord. Dehinam dehasam yogad dvandva ishvara lilaya sukam dukam mrityar janma shapo nugraha evacha. Because of the actions of the Supreme Lord's external energy, the living entities are conditioned in contact with material bodies. The dualities of happiness and distress, birth and death, curses and favors are natural byproducts of this contact with the material world." And he goes on, "Persons engaged in devotional service to Lord Vasudev Krishna have naturally perfect knowledge and detachment from this material world. Therefore, such devotees are not interested in the so-called happiness or so-called distress in this world. Neither I, Lord Shiva, nor Brahma, nor the Aswini Kumaras, nor Narada, or any of the other great sages who are the sons of Brahma, nor even the demigods, can understand the pastimes and personality of the Supreme Lord, although we are part of the Supreme Lord. We consider ourselves independent, separate controllers and thus we cannot understand his identity. And then he explains that one who is very dear, he holds no one is very dear and no one is inimical. The Supreme Lord is equal to everyone. The Supreme Lord wishes auspiciousness to everyone. This magnanimous Chichaketu is a dear devotee of the Lord. He is equal to all living beings, and he is free from attachment and hatred. Similarly, I am also very dear to Lord Narayan. Therefore, no one should be too astonished to see the activities of the most exalted devotee of Narayan, for they are free from attachment and envy. They are always peaceful, and they are equal to everyone. When Lord Shiva glorified Chitraketu in this way, Parvati was astonished. She understood what a great personality Chitraketu was. Now we may ask, why did she do that? This is Leela. When a great person like Chitraketu is put in such a difficult situation, Krishna reveals to them what is their greatness. Anyone could appear very saintly when things are going just the way we like them to go. Parikshit Maharaj is glorified for all time because he accepted the curse of dying in 7 days as a blessing of the Lord and attained perfection. Ambarish Maharaj, we will read about him in the 9th canto. He was a grihastha with a family and an occupation. He was also kingly. Durvasa Muni was a sadhu. Durvasa Muni was angry because he was offended by a slight detail of what appeared to be an offense by Ambarish. And with his mystical powers, he tried to kill him. But Ambarish held no envy or fear. Krishna, I'm yours. He only prayed for Durvasa Muni's happiness. In this way, a renunciate with 60,000 disciples going with him all over the world was shown to be far less realized than a man who has a wife and a children who's working in the world. Grihetako banetako sadahari politako. Whether we're family or whether we're living in the forest as a yogi, these things are details. What's really important is what is our consciousness. A swami can be very proud of being a swami. That means it's not an enlightened state. Or he could be very humble. A mother can be very proud of being a mother. Or she could be a very humble servant as a mother, proud of the grace of God. And that mother is far superior than a yogi or a sadhu. It's a matter of consciousness. This is what Srimad Bhagavatam is teaching us. Chitraketu was cursed to be a demon. What is worse for a devotee than to have to be a demon? A demon means you become the enemy of the devotees. There's nothing worse that can be a curse. If you love God and you love God's devotees and you're cursed to be the enemy of all the devotees. But Chitraketu was happy. My dear Parvati, you're such a great, exalted, wonderful soul. I honor whatever you speak. If that's what you want me to do, then I'm happy to do it.
My Guru Srila Prabhupada wrote a beautiful line. He said, the greatness of a person is estimated by how we respond to very difficult, taxing situations. And the path of bhakti, when difficulties and challenges come, it brings us closer to God and purifies us. And whoever we are, difficulties will come. Our choice, will we be crippled by that, or will we grow and flourish? And how did Chichaketu grow and flourish even in this most difficult situation? Because satsang. Because of the association and the blessings of the sages, Narada Muni, Angira Muni. There are three principles that are so important that give us a foundation in life where we can grow and be strong and come closer to God in both the sunny days and the stormy days. Satsang, the company with people who inspire us spiritually. Sadhana, a regular spiritual practice. And sadachar, living our life with integrity and character. If we just do these three things, whatever may happen in this world, we will grow in character, grow spiritually, grow in our real ananda, our real happiness, and be in a more powerful place to share that wealth of spiritual joy with others. And that was Chichaketu. Even though he became Vritrasura, practically the worst asura that anybody has ever seen, he was a pure devotee. And today, actually, when Vritrasura and Indra fought, it was just at the junction between Satya Yuga and Treta Yuga. So that was long, long ago. And still, every Bhagavad Gita that anyone gives anywhere in the world, it's our greatest happiness to recite the prayers of Vritrasura. The Paramahamsas, the most enlightened sages, the Mahayogis, they worship the words of Vritrasura. Because no material circumstance could interfere with his love for God. We cannot imitate. But this is the beautiful lesson of the sixth canto of Srimad Bhagavatam. And although these stories are very extreme, their purpose is to give an example that each and every one of us, whoever we are, we could emulate the principles and the essence of it and attain the same goal of being loving, compassionate instruments of Krishna's divine grace. Thank you very much.